start up here. Two more sessions to go, first on BC and then Cogeco Communications afterwards. So we're very happy to have Glen LeBlanc here, CFO of BC. Glen, thanks again for joining us today. So the deep dive topic for today is kind of a little bit broad, strategy, tactics, and execution. Now, it sounds kind of odd, but I think if there's any Canadian telecom player that exemplifies putting all three together and moving the business forward, I think it is definitely BCE. And so we're going to cover off a lot of areas of the business where strategy, tactics, and execution have really come into play. We'll talk about wireless TV and fiber to the home. So just, Glen, on the wireless front, one thing I want to kind of just dive into a little bit, it's kind of rare we actually see any of the large national wireless players with a notable network advantage, at least in market. And I know you guys have talked about all the stuff that you've done with LTE Advanced, whether that's quad band or tri-band. Can you just comment a little bit, just for people here and listening in online, just what you've done on the wireless network side and just how it's helping, you know, what is pretty good momentum in the business?
Sure, Drew. And thank you for having us here today. Look, it's been no surprise to our investors that we continue to speak about network leadership in wireless and have done for a number of years. The investments we've made, the spectrum we've purchased, the advancements we've made in ensuring that LTE is available to virtually all Canadians now, and now LTE Advanced and has been critical to some of the market share that we've continued to take, the performance that we've enjoyed in industry-leading ARPU growth, exceptional churn in our business, and EBITDA performance that's second to none in the industry. And some of that is driven by our network leadership. As you mentioned, carrier aggregation and quad band carrier aggregation. 50% of Canadians will have access to speeds on our network of 900 megabits per second in 2018. And that's remarkable. Now, practically, those speeds will be more like 200 to 250, but no one else in the industry is delivering speeds of that nature, and it is because of the investments we've made for years, and I believe we're the only one right now doing quad play carrier aggregation in the country. And as I said, you're seeing it in what I believe is our results, and that is a 9.4% EBITDA performance in the past quarter. I was extremely pleased with 3% ARPU growth. That continues to surprise, I think, even me. And we've been saying for a number of quarters now that the ARPU performance would start to look more in the single-digit range, and yet we're still performing with some pretty healthy ARPU.
And on that ARPU growth, we haven't seen the industry really at all for a couple of years push the needle on core pricing. So presumably a lot of upsell and tiering and data growth driving that?
Yeah, absolutely. Data growth is the big one. It's faster we make our network, the more data people consume. And if you could download a movie in 1 minute and now can do it in 30 seconds, the behavior is that people are downloading two movies in 1 minute. So it's phenomenal what data overage and data growth and the opportunity to monetize that has meant for us. It's important for us to continue that network leadership, and you'll see that well into 18, the investments we make in our network.
Just sticking with the theme here in terms of tactics, execution, and strategy. One of the things that was talked about on the Q3 call was, potentially launching, a new kind of prepaid service to kind of compete at a lower end. I want to get your latest thoughts on that, but also along the lines with the government kind of looking for more affordability or affordable options in the wireless market going forward, and just how BCE and maybe more broadly you think the industry is going to address that.
Yeah, well, if we step back and look at how the wireless industry is performing, I think the industry across the board performed exceptionally well in Q3 with ourselves and even our largest two competitors in the country all having fairly strong wireless performance. The industry continues to grow. We're enjoying great population growth in our country, with 300,000 to 400,000 growth in immigration each year, which is fantastic. We're seeing that the behavior, consumer behavior, as far as putting cell phones in people at younger and younger ages changing, and that offers growth and consumers choosing to take two devices. So we're seeing great growth in the industry, but we're also seeing a sector of the industry growing that has been not a tremendous focus for BCE, and that is the prepaid. So as more and more Canadians look to that as a front-end affordable solution for wireless, I think the question that comes to us is that an area we should be playing, not so much due to the front-end profitability of the prepaid segment, but the opportunity for postpaid migration. So once you're with an organization and you're with a brand and you're with a trusted carrier, is there a greater opportunity for us to take those prepaid and migrate them towards a postpaid solution with BCE and our wireless brand? So I think in the coming months, Drew, you're going to see us launch an offering, and we're going to have a greater presence in the prepaid market. I think it's a space right now that, although I said our lower ARPU, I think we can do a better job of being involved in order to enjoy the upstream migration. So when you think about our industry and you mentioned about a wireless affordability, I think it's lost on many of how many wireless affordable plans actually exist in our country today. We all have flanker brands. The Virgin brand is available to our customers and certainly offers lower price points, entry price points. And I just mentioned the prepaid and what we're going to do to have a better presence there and hopefully address some of the government's concerns about wireless affordability. The balance to all of that, you have to remember, is that the wireless networks in Canada are some of the best networks in the world, and I may argue our network would be equivalent to any network you would find in the world. And that takes investment. And part of the reason we've been able to make that investment is because of the wireless framework that we have existing in our country. And I think we need to be careful that that's never challenged, or I think the fear is that you stifle investment and ultimately end up with a materially inferior network, which none of us would ultimately want to see for our country.
And just, you know, just on that kind of theme of, policy out of Ottawa, do you sense with this government, they truly understand that the wireless networks and infrastructure and even on the fiber side are some of the best? Do they truly get that, you know, we're ahead of the curve, where maybe 10 years or 15 years ago we were behind the curve on that?
Oh, I certainly believe that our government gets that. We can imagine the degree of dialogue we have with the government and to ensure that that's well understood. And the fact that the government has continued to stick to the policy or the framework that it's got to be facility-based, it gives me confidence that they understand that anything else would threaten what we have. If you do any traveling worldwide, it doesn't take you long to recognize what we have here, and it really can't be taken for granted. We have wireless coverage, wireless reliability, wireless speeds that you just do not experience when you travel Europe or even into the United States. So, and I think our government is better understanding that all the time.
Just shifting gears on the tactical side, we have Shaw getting a little stronger, I guess, as the days go by with their LTE upgrade at some point offering the iPhone. And, of course, everyone's seen the pricing plans and market. I asked TELUS, this morning, just kind of their approach to this. I guess stronger player, not a new player, but stronger player in the market. From your perspective, how do you expect to manage that one going forward?
Well, Drew, as you know all too well, we see a sizable investment from Shaw that will take a number of years to bring their network up to LTE speeds. At the same time, I just mentioned that we're going to be delivering LTE Advanced. We're going to be delivering quad band aggregation that's going to deliver speeds that are second to none in the country. So with all due respect to the investments they're making to improve their network, I think there'll still be a significant gap in network quality between themselves and ourselves. There's a limited number of handsets available to operate on their LTE network that they're launching, so I think that that's going to Takes some time for them to have the proliferation of handsets available. And frankly, the challenge I think that exists there is that each of us have both our core brand, Bell, and our flanker brand, Virgin, that play at different segments of the market but yet operate on the same network. So if you're going to try to play on the lower end pricing point, we have a brand that can play there, that can be more price sensitive yet deliver you a superior network experience. And then, of course, if you're looking for a wide handset of lineup with tremendous network experience and customer experience, then you have the Bell brand. So, I would say we are well suited to compete against whatever Shaw chooses to do in their strategy, whether it be selling on network attributes, which I think for us we'd be happy to go there, or selling on price, which we have brands that can protect us in that marketplace as well.
It's an iPhone quarter, as everyone's well aware in this room and listening in. Just update us on kind of what you're seeing in terms of demand supply on the iPhone 10, and an update there.
Well, when these new devices launch, we tend to get a limited inventory in Canada compared to the rest of the world, which we all understand. Early days, we received a small amount of inventory for the iPhone 10 launch, and we had quite a few pre-orders, which consumed that inventory very fast. You have your tech-savvy users who line up and sleep in tents overnight to get their hands on a device, and I think we're satisfying that early demand with the inventory we have. But let's be realistic of what fourth quarter looks like for device sales. Fourth quarter is all about 2 days. It's about Black Friday and it's about Boxing Day or the Boxing Day week sales. And the vast majority of retail activity occurs on those days. So I think it's early days for us. We got our limited upfront inventory and it went extremely well, as you would expect it would, with the heavy number of iPhone users that exist out there, excited to see the new technology. I think for us, you'll hear more from us in February when we release our fourth quarter to get a better feel for what those boom retail days are.
Yep.
But I expect them to be healthy as they are each year. And there's not just the iPhone lineup. There's new Samsung devices. And I think people are quite accustomed now to these retail days. And know that prices tend to be most opportunistic around those times.
Absolutely. Shifting gears just to the wireline side, and again, sticking with the theme of kind of tactics, I think in wireline, you guys have been extremely tactical with what you've done. More recently, an alarm or proposed alarm force transaction or acquisition, maybe a good time, given the fresh news on that one, just what you're thinking is there in terms of doing that token.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the announcement last week about our pending acquisition of AlarmForce. But this isn't new to BC. I have to remind investors that we have an alarm offering in Atlantic Canada and have for a number of years. And in our acquisition of Bell MTS, we acquired a security servicing company, AAA Security, and with a little bit of learning and understanding of what was taking place in Atlantic Canada and watching the performance in Manitoba of that alarm company, it really advanced our thinking to say that this is a complementary product to what we already do. It's part of owning the smart home. It's part of owning the connected home. And its churn benefits on our existing suite of products are exceptional. It's a natural fit for what we do. I'm really, really excited about this. I know it's a tremendously small acquisition for somebody with the market cap of BCE, but it's more indicative of owning the home and the strategy we want to roll out is to have the full suite of products in the home, the smart home, the connected home, the future home. And this is just one of those products. And as I say, turn experience where someone has all of their home products, including AAA Security in Manitoba, huge churn benefit. So stay tuned. We're going to get this transaction closed and then start to, I think, more aggressively be able to market it. Not to mention, I think it fits so well with such a trusted brand like Bell, which is known to Canadians for 137 years, and I think people can trust Bell to be their security provider and their home protection provider.
Now, just taking you back to your Bell Line days, you did, I think, provide a home security solution mm-hmm. back then. You know, never really saw any kind of data points, and business was never disclosed, but we got the impression that it was a little bit more of a difficult service to scale
mm-hmm.
as a telecom provider. Can you just kind of comment whether that's changed and how quickly you can kind of bring this thing to market, I guess?
It's very sticky, and we started from scratch in Atlanta, Canada. BCE East, Bell Canada East, Bell Alliant decided that we would start from scratch and build it with our existing customer base, and that's a slow process. It's gone exceptionally well where we have it. All of the churn experience is exactly what we thought. But when we look out to other regions like Manitoba, Manitoba bought a security company, Bell MTS, prior to our acquisition of MTS. And they had a greater success because they bought scale. And a little bit of what we're doing with Alarm Force is buying scale. This is a scale business. The monitoring side of the business is all about scale. So I think what we're now reaching, Drew, is a little bit of a critical mass. We have a sizable customer base with Alarm Force. We have one in Manitoba. We have a smaller but growing base in Atlanta, Canada. And now I think together, as managed as a national security service, we can grow this and take advantage of economies of scale.
And it's interesting because, you know, back to the bigger picture here, your wireline business, you know, you guys are doing an amazing job on cost and certainly kind of being extremely tactical and strategic to grow the revenues. Let me just pivot here to the TV business. I think it's obviously, you know, still a growth area for BCE given where your market share is. But you've been really kind of ahead of the curve, I guess, in some respects in terms of offering things like Crave TV and Alt TV. Obviously, you have satellite, you have Fibe TV. So you have a full suite, and you're vertically integrated. So maybe just kind of give us an update on kind of how Alt TV, you know, what its traction is in the market. Maybe an update on Crave TV would be helpful, and just how that helps to round out your TV strategy.
Yeah, look, really excited about Alt TV, something that I love talking about because I think it's evolution of the way TV and content is consumed. Crave TV is going very well. It's meeting all of our internal expectations. It's ramping as we anticipated it would. Alt TV is very strategic, and yet you have to see it for what it is. It's the fact that conventional television and the consumption of conventional content right now, there's a segment of the market that's growing, that cord nevers or cord cutters that don't see themselves as a conventional TV purchaser. They're not interested in watching TV the way maybe somebody my age watched TV through multiple sets in the home or large screen TVs. But think of the youth market. Maybe it's a student or maybe it's a single living in a condo or a young couple that lives in a condo that wants to, that might even not own a TV set, consumes most of their content through a device or an iPad or a laptop. Alt TV is delivered via an app. There's no set-top box. There's no truck roll. It's a downloadable app. It allows you to watch TV on any of those devices, but a maximum of two streams at a time. So the construction of the product is about us dipping our toe in an evolving market, which is the cord nevers or the cord cutters. It ensures that we're careful not to cannibalize our existing TV offering, our linear TV offering. I think if you live in a single-family dwelling and there's a couple kids and two adults living in that home, the likelihood is that the product won't meet your needs as it has a limited number of viewing streams, and it's probably not, you don't have it on your 60-inch screen TV to watch the football game on Sunday or the Leafs game on the weekend. But it is a sector of the market that I think is growing and that we need to be cognizant of. Strategically, I'm excited about this. I think it's very, very important. And ultimately, when you think about the future, way down the road, it's hard to envision that the delivery of content is going to be any other way than an over-the-top delivery through a broadband pipe. You know, whether that be 2025 or 2028 is a bit irrelevant. It's about the evolution of delivery. And I think us getting involved in this now is critical. Margin protection, it's about the same. It's about a $10 different price point up, you know, on the top line. But because we don't have a truck roll, because we don't have a set-top box, and it's all self-install, we, from a margin perspective, it's neutral.
Let's talk about the competition. I think anybody who subscribes to a TV service today certainly would point to IPTV or your Fibe TV product as the market leader. We'll have Rogers and other cable cos rolling out X1 in Eastern Canada. Just thoughts on kind of how you intend to kind of compete and keep your stand and leadership in the market against that product.
Yeah, Drew, I would agree with your comments that we've had a competitive product attribute advantage now for some time. I think IPTV is a phenomenal product, and we're constantly rolling out new attributes to that. We had 4K a number of years ago, and then we had the kind of restart TV and look back TV, and recently we launched the ability to watch your home PVR recordings from your device remotely, and soon we're going to launch the ability to download your home PVR content such that you could download it to your device and watch it when offline, like on an airplane. So these are the evolutions of the product that you're seeing that I think we recognize have to continue for us to have a leadership position. We know our largest competitor is launching a great TV platform, the Comcast platform. I think that closes the gap on product superiority, if you will. But, you know, let's put that in perspective. The launch is going to be a soft launch in 18. That means a soft launch to new subscribers. Every existing subscriber to Rogers TV today, should they choose to take advantage of this new Comcast platform, would be required to change out the box, which is disruptive and expensive. And if I contact you, Drew, and ask you to change out the box in your home, it probably drives a buying decision, which I think creates advantage for us. If you're going to shop, if you're going to be forced to make a buying decision, the first thing you're going to do is shop. You're going to ask yourself what's out there. It might wake up sleepy customers who haven't done anything with their product choices in many, many years. So, you know, Rogers is the leader in market share in Toronto, for example, on video and internet. At the same time they're launching Comcast video platform, we're going to be completing our fiber to the home in the 416 area. So we're going to have the best internet experience, you know, in this country. We're going to be evolving our TV platform, moving from Media Room to Media First and all the new product attributes I alluded to. I think we're in great shape, particularly that we finish the Toronto market approximately the same time. They say sometimes it's good to have good luck as much as good management, and I think the timing for that couldn't have worked out much better for us.
Here's a little bit of a big picture question that I did put in writing this quarter, and that was, you know, we're all trying to figure out, you know, the battle between the cable cos and telcos on the wireline front, and Canada's a little different than the U.S. in that both you and Telus are rapidly deploying fiber. I guess we're just trying to figure out who wins, who loses, and it's a tough one to figure out. So I'm kind of, my working assumption is, other than kind of quarterly wins and losses, it's a little bit of a stalemate longer term. Is there any other way I think the investment community should be looking at this as you go up against pretty good cable competitors but with a very competitive product set yourself?
Well, I think that probably summarizes it right there, is that in a duopoly as we exist in this country, if you have product equality, or what I'll argue on the internet side will be product superiority when we complete our fiber to the home deployment, then tell me why you don't reach at least market equilibrium and share. And you know now that that isn't the case for us, that we find ourselves in a market share disadvantage to Rogers, for example, in Toronto. I think there's a great opportunity for us upon developing and deploying fiber to take share in internet, to take share in video. And when you look at the existing internet subscribers that we have versus Rogers, or the video subscribers that we have versus our competitors across this country, and you even got to a point of 50% share, and you and I can debate the time horizon it takes to get there, but I don't see a debate that ultimately that is, that when you have product equivalency or what I would argue is product superiority, why not? And I think we have a footprint that I can point to that proves that business case out. We have Atlanta, Canada, where fiber has been deployed for 7 and 8 years in some of our territories, and we have territories now where we have 50. We have some cities where we have 60% market share in video, where it's been deployed for a number of years. So, I think the game is the deployment of fiber is going to give us a network superiority, a network at least equivalency that is going to ensure that share take is available for us for many years.
Interesting. Is there a question out there in the audience for Glenn? A couple more for me then, Glenn. Just with respect to the pace of BCE's fiber build, I think it's been well articulated under a 70% CapEx intensity umbrella, 700,000 premises annually. You did talk on the Q3 call about how kind of the lowering temporarily of your wireless CapEx probably gives you a little bit more cushion on the wireline within that umbrella. A lot of moving parts to this question, but can you sustain that 600 to 700 annual kind of overlay with fiber a year? Can it accelerate? But obviously, if you get out into the suburban markets, it becomes a little bit more expensive.
Sure.
So just trying to see how this deployment post-Toronto kind of evolves from here.
It's a great question. I think it ebbs and flows in any given calendar year, depending on the communities and the areas you're trying to deploy. Because the pace of deployment isn't just about capital availability. It's about connecting to hydro poles. It's about permits and right-of-ways that you need to obtain. It's about the mix of aerial versus buried plant that exists in any given community you go to, and the complexity of the construction program. You heard us on the last call say that we're optimistic to reach 650,000 homes in calendar 18. I think, I'm pretty confident that we can up our deployment of homes passed in calendar 18 to something around that 700 mark, which would be a record for us. That would be the most we've ever, I think, deployed in any year. We're completing Toronto, an incredibly complicated build, the most complicated city that we've ever attempted to complete. So, we'll see Toronto, for all intents and purposes, being completed in 18, which will allow us to look to other territories. And naturally, for competitive reasons, we don't announce where we're going to be too far in advance. But you've heard us say that Montreal is a focus, and about 13% or so covered with fiber to the home in Montreal now. But it's an aerial plant infrastructure that we have in Montreal, which makes deployment a lot easier. So a long answer to say, I believe that the pace of 650 is absolutely sustainable. It'll ebb and flow from the low end of that range to the high end of that range, depending on the complexities of communities that we choose. And I think the 17.5% capital intensity number you hear us speak of is sustainable. Each year that we start to complete another community, it's hard to believe, but 4.5 million of our homes be covered by fiber next year, 4.5 million homes. That's 50% of our ultimate objective. So, I think you can't lose sight of, can Bell build out fiber to 9 million homes while maintaining 17 to 17.5% density? My answer to that is we already have. We're 50% of the way there.
Interesting. question. One final question for me to end up on. Just talk a little bit about this 5G integration with the fiber build. Telus has probably been the most outspoken, just given how aggressive its fiber build has been the last few years. Obviously laying the groundwork for 5G, and it will pay dividends probably over the medium term once 5G becomes the focus. Just from a BC perspective, you don't talk about it as much. Is there anything different in terms of what your 5G expectations are looking out the next 2 to 3 years? Do you see it as, you know, your fiber build, you know, ticking a number of boxes in terms of economies?
That's exactly right.
Cool.
Now, we speak so much about fiber deployment, about bringing broadband directly to the home. I think what's lost is the understanding, because 5G is out on the horizon somewhat yet, and we don't think you'll see commercial applications of 5G at fixed broadband, you know, 2021 or so in our country. But what we're building today, are we building a fiber to the home network, or are we building a 5G backhaul network? And the answer is yes. It's exactly what we're building. We're building both. And the fiber we're deploying in every single community today is going to serve as the backhaul to small cell 5G deployment. And those that aren't building fiber today, I guess I ask the question, when is the fiber deployment going to have to occur to ultimately be able to take advantage of what 5G is going to mean to us? So, you know, sometimes we get asked the question, Drew, about our low capital intensity in wireless, which is, you know, it's been exceptional for us to have the network leadership position we have and run at capital intensity of 9%. But truth be told, there's a big piece of fiber being built over here in our wireline business that our wireless operation is going to benefit greatly at in the future. So for me, I don't know which business unit it appropriately resides in, but suffice to say, the fiber infrastructure we're building today is going to be paramount to the 5G deployment in the future. So that's exciting.
And just to push you one step further on that, is BC, quote unquote, keeping up with Telus in terms of, you know, that backhaul for 5G? Do you feel that you have to be at a certain point just to match kind of their level of deployment on that front, just given, you know, there'll probably be a network share on this?
Telus has done a great job. I would never say BC is worried about keeping up with anyone. So,
gotcha.
My conclusion on that one. We've understood what network leadership has meant to this organization for a long, long time, and we're not going to lose that network leadership position, whether that be on our wireline or our wireless coverage.
Well, with that, Glenn, we'll end it there, and thanks very much for
Drew,
joining us
today.
Drew,
it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.